The hour of 8:30 having arrived, I'm going to call to order State Local Government Operations Reform Technology and Elections. Representative Hilstrom, will have you up first. I will move the House File 172 be recommended to pass and be sent to the General Register. Representative Hilstrom, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This issue was brought to me by a constituent. Apparently, in Minnesota statute 204B.24, it currently reads that when you want to be an election judge, I insert your name solemnly swear that I will perform the duties of an election judge. My constituent would rather affirm rather than swear, and so due to religious preferences. And currently in state statute under 645.44 subdivision 6, it states that an oath includes affirmation in a case where the law or where by law an affirmation may be substituted for an oath. So Senate counsel actually felt that it would be more clear if we just added the words or affirm in this section of the statute. Mr. Chair, that's it.
Members to the bill, or is there anyone that wishes to testify for or against the bill? Seeing no one that wishes to testify and there are no questions, Representative Hilstrom, I'll renew my motion that House File 172 be recommended to pass and be placed on the General Register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Is Representative Dabney here? I did promise him I was going to bring... He's in the basement. Well, get him. Representative Welty, did he arrive? Representative Welty, since Representative Dabney is not here, we'll go with Representative Welty. Representative Welty, unless you know of another stop this bill has to make, I'm going to move that House File or Senate File 307 be recommended to pass and be placed on the General Register. So, Representative Welty, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. The bill that you have before you, it's simply, right now what we have in state statute is that all local units of government have to have an out-of-state travel policy, and they have to review it annually. When going through the list of mandate recommendations that were coming forward from our local units of government, this one appeared. Instead of fully repealing it, I decided that we would just repeal the annual review. So the local units of government still have to have a statewide travel policy in place, but they can review it when they want. And there are many local units of government where the individuals do not travel out of state, and so why would we require them to review it annually? So we'll just have them review it when they wish. And I think it's a message more about why the state should get involved or when the state should get involved in managing or micromanaging. And I just believe this is good government. Let's leave it up to the discretion of our local units of government and our locally elected officials.
And you have someone who wishes to testify, so welcome to the committee. And
thank you, Mr. Chair. Joe Matthews with the Association of Minnesota Counties. We testified in the subcommittee, and I don't have anything to add to Representative Welty's comments, but if there are any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Are there any questions?
Yeah.
Representative Kiffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My only concern here, and again, this is a review annually of a policy, but having sat through a number of presentations by the legislative auditor who was questioning expenditures, and then recently we had a situation in the Department of Transportation of travel and the big issue that was there, and I know this is a review of the policy. Is there, though, an annual requirement or a process requirement where you review the actual expenditures to see if they are in accordance with policy? I think that is more of a critical issue.
Yes. Mr. Chair, Representative Kiffmeyer, as part of the annual county budgeting process, they do look at what their travel expenditures have been and what they're allowing going forward. And so I know that the counties do pay very close attention, especially given the current fiscal situations. I know a lot of counties have been very mindful of what travel has been, both in-state and out-of-state.
Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just one follow-up to that. If you don't do a review of this policy, and I know state law makes changes, there are things going on all the time, so your policies need to change. If you don't review it annually, when would you review policy? What's your process?
Mr. Matthews.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kiffmeyer, right now, under current practice, this really becomes kind of a consent agenda item. There isn't a lot of change in this policy from year to year because really, essentially, counties have adopted policies that regulate when you're allowed to travel out of state and when not. this isn't something that specifies specific expenditures, for example. So the only time that there's really substantive change is when the county's making a big policy change on whether or not they'll allow out-of-state travel for one reason or another. So really what we're looking at is kind of in the current law, there's a lot of busy work. We think it's important that everybody have a policy and it be clear to employees when it's okay or not okay to make a request. But this in no way approves or denies specific requests going forward. That's part of the budgeting process we do yearly. I hope that answers your question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was going to start out by just asking why, but I'll add to it with the last answer. Why can't the counties just do this on their own? Why does the state have to put in a law something that says they must develop?
Representative Matthews, do you want to give us the history of this piece of legislation?
Mr. Chair, Representative Emmer, I'm not familiar with the entire history, but my understanding is that some years ago, I believe it was actually Representative Seifert that carried this legislation, there was concern about whether or not local governments were being mindful in this area. I would agree with you. I don't know that we need the state to tell us that we need a policy. At this point, every county has a policy in place. So we feel that, you know, if you repeal the whole statute, there wouldn't be much difference than if you just repealed the annual review. I mean, it's something that we will continue to have in place at this point going forward anyway.
Representative Emmer, you wish to contact us in Cypress? Or?
Oh. Is that another suggestion, Mr.
No, there's a story with this bill. It deals with certain county commissioners going to Hawaii.
Representative Chair Pelosi.
Representative Welty.
Thank you, Chair Pelosi and members. I did speak with Representative Seifert about the bill when I introduced this, and he was essentially taking a neutral position on this. I told him that I wasn't going to fully repeal the law that he had put in place 2 years ago, but that I would be taking out the annual review requirement. And I think it reflects now what the local units of government have in place. Representative Ember, we can have that discussion. I mean, if you want a full repeal of it, we could discuss that,
Mr. Chair,
on the floor.
Well, we're for wealthy. That's not the place. It's
for here.
Why don't we do it right now? Going to occur. I know what's going to happen next. Representative Ember.
You do. I'm wondering if the author would accept a friendly amendment to go farther, and would it be further? I think it's farther. Just repeal the whole darn thing and let the local folks do their work.
Chair Pelosi, at this time, without having spoken with the author of the original bill that was enacted a couple of years ago, in order to get a change made, I would suggest that we leave it as is. What I would fear is that as we move forward with this, if we go with the full repeal and then that doesn't get enacted, we make no changes, any substance, and that we don't, you know, we still have the local units of government with an annual review.
Further questions? Representative Biskin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Wilkie, my only concern, and I support the bill, I mean, you're taking some words out and it's getting me closer to reducing to one book at least, but my concern is that with the state mandate that there be a policy, how are local units of government informed when state law changes, which may then make their current policy illegal, and thereby when they abide by their current policy, they get a catch-22. How are local units of government informed when state law changes?
Mr. Matthews, or Representative Welty, whoever wants to.
I think we'll both address this, Chair Pelosi and members. I know I've spoken with many local units of government. Whenever changes are made, they usually know before I have been able to get to them, for the fact that their local organization or their lobbying organization usually send out an update as soon as laws have been changed, as soon as bills have been signed, and I know that they have very good communication with their lobbying organization, so I'll let Mr. Matthews.
Mr. Matthews.
And Mr. Chair, I would just concur with that. At AMC, we really spend a lot of time making sure that folks know about changes in the law. I also know that the state auditor's office has been really helpful in helping us get information out to folks, through various communication avenues to make sure that people are aware of changes. So we will make sure that that's taken care of.
Representative Markworth, you're on the list. No. Representative Moore. No. Representative Conn.
Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to make a comment on Representative Bliskin's desire to have the statutes be one book. Yes. Some 20 years ago, particularly appropriate since we're talking about out-of-state travel, I actually was on a trip to China not paid for by Minnesota taxpayers, teaching a short course, part of a faculty group teaching a short course on law and science. And we were shown the total statutes for the country of China, and they were actually about this big. Now I understand with more of an advance to capitalism, they have greatly expanded, and they're much bigger than this little set we saw in 1988. Just be careful what you wish for.
Further questions? Seeing none, anyone else wish to testify on this bill? No? Then I'll renew my motion that Senate File 307 be recommended to pass and be sent to the General Register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay? Motion prevails. Representative Dabney?
Thank you, Chair.
We get to your bill today. House File 300. And members, there was a delete everything. Representative Dabney, I believe that there's a copy of the delete everything.
The legislators were good enough to give that to me this morning when I arrived.
So, Representative Dabney, the bill has been amended,
mm-hmm.
and we have the amended version in front of us. I'm going to move that House File 300 be recommended to pass and be placed on the General Register. Members, you have the delete everything, and I believe you've had 4 days to contact Representative Dabney or anyone else who's interested. And Representative Dabney, I know you have a individual that wishes to testify today, so welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Hi, I'm Tim Bonham. I'm treasurer of the Minneapolis PFL party and active also in the various other political activities in the state.
And to the amended bill.
Do you want to help explain the rationale for this?
Okay. Starting back last August, I was starting to arrange locations for Minneapolis precinct caucuses. This year will be electing mayor, city council, board of estimate, taxation, and park board. And running into problems arranging for rooms and stuff, mainly we're in parks and schools and library locations. And these are fairly heavily used and tightly scheduled. And during even-numbered years, there's a provision in state law that precinct caucuses get precedence in reserving rooms, and schools and stuff have to make them available. And also things that people can get time off to go to caucuses and so forth. But that doesn't apply in off years, the odd-numbered years, and both Minneapolis and St. Paul have precinct caucuses during those years, which Minneapolis and St. Paul make up a big percentage of the state's population. And the problems we had with these rooms are that they were frequently reserved for other events, adult education and courses for immigrants and sports events, things like that were all scheduled already, and we had difficulty getting rooms, and people at the schools and parks tried to make efforts to fit us in their schedule, but it sometimes came down that obviously we couldn't change our date. If we had insisted that we needed the room, they would have to tell somebody else that, well, you can't have your adult education class that was scheduled here because of the caucuses and stuff. And so if we had the law that would have this on the books, that there were precinct caucuses and rooms were available and so forth, and people could get time off from work to come to the caucuses in these years. We don't like to be in the position of forcing events that the school have already scheduled to move somewhere else, and we don't like to be in a position of having to move to less desirable locations because it's already booked. And we felt that if this was in the state law, it would be known in advance, and we could schedule jointly with the schools or libraries events and not have to. Everybody could know about the schedule enough in advance that we wouldn't have to be pushing anybody out of use of the facilities.
President Dabney, you want to add to that?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As Mr. Bonham is explaining, state statute already allows certain privileges to the political major political parties to facilitate citizen involvement in the precinct caucuses in even numbered years. This bill is narrowly crafted to apply only to the cities of the first class in the odd numbered years and provide those same privileges to again allow citizens to be involved.
Members, to the bill is amended. Representative
Kiffmeyer. Mr. Chairman and Representative Dabney, why only the cities of the first class? Do not others are interested in this? Why only the cities of the first class? Why not everybody statewide?
Mr. Chair, Representative Kiffmeyer, no one from cities outside cities of the first class has raised a concern about this issue.
And Representative Kiffmeyer, we deliberately laid the bill over for a series of days in order for anyone who had a concern to come to Representative Dabney or to the committee. And to my knowledge, no one's come to me or staff or to Representative Dabney.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Dabney.
Since the bill was introduced, and I don't have the date, and nor since the last week's action in this committee, no one from either side of the aisle has approached me regarding the bill. No lobbyist for any of the affected jurisdictions has approached me with comments or concerns about the bill. I've not heard from the League of Minnesota Cities, the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities, the Association of Small Cities. No one has raised any concerns regarding the bill or interest.
President Gutler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and members, I think we know what this bill is really designed to do. And I would argue, Mr. Chair, that this is actually where we raise the concerns on behalf of our constituents, the people we represent as in this committee. I want to know how this bill gets us towards the number one goal of this session, solving our budget deficit. Does it in any way, Representative Dabney?
Representative Dabney.
Mr. Chair, Representative Gottwald, it does not get us neither further towards nor further away from solving the budget deficit.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Dabney, is there any potential cost to these cities as a result of doing this, something that they're currently not paying for?
Representative Dabney.
Not that I'm aware of, Mr. Chair. Representative Caldwell.
Representative Caldwell, there's no fiscal note. Representative Caldwell.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Representative Dabney, I'm specifically referring to costs that the cities would bear, not the state. At a time when we're talking about how we can relieve government costs, there are, in fact, costs to cities and local units of government when we impose these precinct caucuses. I would argue if you talk to any of them, they would tell you there are. When they have to cancel meetings, when they have to offer meeting space at the lowest possible cost, there are other costs associated with holding precinct caucuses in a community that are borne by that local community. So that's another concern I have about this bill.
Mr. Chair?
Representative
As Mr. Bonham has pointed out, it's actually the revenue source for those local governments because, at least in the Minneapolis case, the city DFL pays rent for the use of the facilities. So, Representative Gottwald, this is a revenue source for jurisdictions.
Representative Fitz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a real quick question, Representative Dabney. Would the Green Party be able to caucus at the same time as this change time with the language in this bill?
Representative Dabney.
Mr. Chair, Representative Distance, the Green Party is free to do as the Green Party chooses.
Any further discussion? Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I read through this language and I've listened to you, and I just need some clarification here. It says the two largest major political parties, and I was just a little bit like, why just two? If you're really wanting to be open to everybody, why just two? I'm not sure. I haven't really thought to specifically answer that question, but just two major parties. and it's the greatest and the second greatest number of votes, shouldn't all be able to do this, not just the two largest and the top two?
Representative.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kipmeyer, this is based on legislation that passed last year regarding the statewide caucuses in the even-numbered years, and it's the same language.
Interesting. Thank you.
Any further discussion? Seeing no further discussion, anyone else wish to testify for or against the bill? Seeing none, I'll renew my motion that House File 300, as amended, be recommended to pass and be sent to the General Register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed, nay? Motion.
No.
Motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Representative Swalowski.
Madam Chair, I am going to move that House File 736 be recommended to pass, and there's been a discussion with Representative Kahn that this should go to the Finance Committee. There is no fiscal note, and the Commissioner is here, but I will make my motion that it be sent to the Finance Committee. So I'll recommend that House File 736 be recommended to pass to be sent to the Finance Committee. And this, members, is, I hope, the last step, and maybe not quite the last step, in a bill that we passed last year that combined the Department of Labor Relations and the Finance Committee. And the intent was to actually save resources and revenue. This would then make the name change. Some of you have seen in committee and on the floor references to this name change. This would then instruct the reviser to put that change into effect. And the commissioner is here to speak to the change and whether or not there is any fiscal cost to the change.
Mr. Commissioner?
Madam Chair, members, for the record, my name is Tom Hansen. I'm the Commissioner of the Department of Management and Budget. It's a pleasure to talk about something other than the stimulus or the budget deficit. So thank you for having me this morning. Just a couple of comments. The merger bill of the Department of Finance and Employee Relations passed was Representative Pawlowski's bill in the House, and Senator Rest in the Senate passed during the 2007 session. Set a time frame of merging our two departments, and it went into effect June 1st, 2008. The workers' comp piece of Old Door went to the Department of Administration. After we combined departments, we started to look at what our new mission would be, and taking into account legislative intent, the purpose of the merger was to try to take a more enterprise approach to managing state resources. And the enterprise systems that we have in management and budget that you're all familiar with, of course, there's the budgeting and that piece that you see, and you see a lot of me, but there's other aspects of our agency that are very important to the day-to-day running of state government. We are the account that we enterprise accounting across all agencies. Human resource management, and our payroll system, and our accounting and procurement system, or MAPS, which some of you are familiar with. So we have taken an enterprise approach. I am not sure. I brought a couple of examples of, I don't, of course, defer to you, but I don't know how this would have a cost. I have, if you, four times a year we put out an economic update. I brought the last three, but you see the one that we did in January has cheesy stickers over the Department of Finance folder. So we are using every scrap of stationery and paper. And then if you get a note from me anytime soon, I have Department of Finance, you know, and I didn't bring the cards, but these are the stack I have left that say Department of Finance. So we are doing our best to use every scrap of paper that says Department of Finance. I don't anticipate that this name change would have any fiscal cost at all to our agency. I think with that, I'll turn it back to the chairman and answer any questions you might have, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Any questions? Is there anyone else in the audience who would like to speak for or against this bill? All right. With that,
Madam Chair, I'll renew my motion that House File 736 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Finance Committee just in case there is any unintended cost to the bill.
All those in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed say nay. Motion fails. And your next bill is House File 801.
Madam Chair, House File 801, I'm going to move be recommended to pass and be sent to the General Register. This bill is at the request of the reference librarian. Robbie LaForce, I want her to address the initial bill, and then we may have an amendment. So, and there's a tab on it. Okay. And we may have the Department of Finance. And so if she would come up. This is probably something we're going to see throughout this session. We've discovered that there would be a way to cut down on the number of reports, and she is going to explain why we need House File 801.
Ms. LaFleur.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Robbie LaFleur, and I'm the director of the Legislative Reference Library. I love to talk about the library and its services and collections, but I'll be brief today, but I will certainly answer any questions that you might have. The basic intent of House File 801 is to reduce the numbers of copies that agencies are required to send to the library. A thumbnail history. The library began in 1969, 40 years ago, and our mandate to become a state depository and receive 10 copies of documents was passed in 1974. So for 35 years, we've been collecting these state documents. In 1991, paper-saving legislation was passed. Legislators were complaining. Their offices were staffed with reports that they would never read, sent by all sorts of agencies. And so the number of reports to be sent to the library was reduced to 6, but more importantly, agencies were no longer allowed to send 201 copies to all of the legislators. It's time to address saving paper again. Now reports are available online and they're archived electronically by the library as well. All of our new documents, lists, and services have links to documents. We still get requests for paper documents, but five extra copies seems excessive, hence the reduction to 2. Section 2 changes the requirement to publish a monthly checklist of state documents and to distribute it to legislators. The reality is that we publish an ongoing list of all the state documents we receive online, so anybody can see it, and you can sign up to be notified via an email list or an RSS feed. Section 3 of the bill amends the statutory definition of a state document. This definition was originally passed in 1976 and has really served us well. We now have over 19,000 state document titles in the legislative library, and actually many more actual volumes than that because many are annual or biannual reports. But in this bill, the words "and issued in print" are taken away because there are some instances in which public reports might never be formally printed. Sections 4, 5, and 7 address a few reports that have specific requirements in the statute, so we took away the references to "send us 10 or "send us 6" and changed it to the "as provided by Section 3.195, which is the general mandate. And then finally, I'll read Section 6 because it's interesting. By 9 a.m. every business day, a depository holding a total of over $100,000 in non-interest-bearing state deposits shall report the balances as of the close of the last business day to the commissioner. And then a copy was to be sent to the library. There's a picture of that in my little handout. And the department has faithfully done this. But I came to realize it had never been used in the more than 20 years I've been at the library. Nobody can ever remember anybody consulting this. I checked with 6 fiscal analysts to be sure that I was not taking away any aspect of government transparency by not asking the department to send these to us, and nobody had any complaints. So with that, I'll take any questions.
Thank you. Representative Diskin.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Representative Kowalski, not having any stake in the timber and or paper industry, I inclined to support this legislation. I guess the one question I do have, though, is on page 2, lines 6 through 10. Representative Pawlowski, do you think there should be more clarity in that statement that remains specifically as to where this should be published so that the citizen can easily find this information? I know right now that there's a place, but without clarity in statute, it could change with a different commissioner, could it not?
Representative Biskins, I'm going to let Robbie LaFleur direct that question.
Ms. LaFleur?
Madam Chair and members, I think off the top of my head, if we added the Legislative Reference Library to a monthly published on its website, a checklist of state documents, that would make it.
Mr. Shepard, would you repeat what you've heard?
Madam Chair and members, the suggestion from Ms. LaFleur in response to Representative Biskin's question would be on page 2, line 8, after the stricken legislators, to insert on its website.
Thank you. Is that as you've requested?
Madam Chair, I'd move that as an amendment, that I would prefer that it be moved as a written amendment in the record rather than any reference to it being a oral amendment.
We have that
right.
By Mr. Shepard. And so the amendment is, again, it reads 2.8 after the deletion on its website. So any discussion to that amendment? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed say nay. The amendment prevails. Okay, so there is another Representative Kipmeyer.
Thank you very much. Just a comment here. I was noticing, striking the word carbon paper, having a new junior legislator here with me, you don't see often references to carbon paper in statutes anymore. And just a question, do you ever use carbon paper anymore? Is there ever a legitimate reason? Just because you're here and curious. Thank you. Ms. LaFleur.
Representative Kitzmeyer and members, I don't know where there is any in the cabinet, so no.
Madam Chair.
Thank you. Other questions? Yeah, Representative Pawlowski.
Madam Chair, if there are no further questions on the bill as amended, there is an amendment in the packet, and I would like to call Kurt Gilcomb of the Finance Department down to explain this amendment. I'll move the amendment at this point, Amendment A1, and then if he would come down. Subsequently, when the bill was introduced and there was discussion about it, our staff came across another way of perhaps improving it. And if the members so desire, we'll add this amendment. So with that, I'm going to let Mr. Yolkin testify.
Good morning, Mr. Yolkin. Please present yourself for the record.
Good morning. My name is Kurt Yolkin. I'm Director for Legislation and Communications for the Department of Finance. I actually have Jerry Ingebrigtsen here, who's a Treasury official for the department, if there's specific questions. But the purpose of the amendment was when staff and Ms. LaFleur brought the bill to our attention, and we noticed the reporting requirement on Section 6, wanted to actually get the language to reflect reality where the department actually does the reporting rather than the actual institutions. So we wanted the language to actually reflect current reality. However, as Ms. LaFleur said, it doesn't appear that anybody accesses the report at the Legislative Reference Library, and so we're working with our webmaster to make sure that the report would still be available on a daily basis to individuals that want to access it. And so if there are any specific questions about the process, I can turn it over to Ms. Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Should the amendment read strike lines 14 to 17? Or another way to ask it is, what does this amendment do to line 14?
Representative Pawlowski?
I'm going to defer to Mr. Shepard on that.
Okay. Mr. Shepard, would you like to address that, please?
Madam Chair and Representative Lanning, the amendment does strike most of line 14. It just leaves in the word daily in the head note, and replaces, just modifies the head note, so the head note would read daily record, and then the rest of line 14 would be stricken.
Thank you.
Any other questions regarding this amendment? Yes, Representative Kalin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Yoakum, can you tell us again the department that you represent?
As of today, I represent the Department of Finance. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Mr. Yoakum. That's what we thought we heard. But actually, I thought that I also heard you say that the intent is for the department, soon to be MMB, to make accessible the record on the department website so it's publicly accessible every day. Did I hear you say that?
Mr. Chairman, I represent Kellen. That is correct. Mr. Flora brought it up, that if the report is going to still be in existence, let's make sure it's available to the public. And so we're working with our webmaster to make sure that will be, if this legislation passes, make sure that it's available.
Representative Kalin.
Madam Chair and Chair Pawlowski, I'm just wondering, having had to make a Data Practices Act request of a department to get information that it was not a comfortable process to make, I'm just wondering, I appreciate this, your statement, but I'm just wondering if Chair Pawlowski or MMB would be willing to just enshrine that in the amendment. I have one proposed language that I would like to follow your lead, Chair Pawlowski.
Madam Chair, Representative Kalin, you're looking at material that is already public record. It's just the method that it's going to be made available instead of stacks of, and you have pictures of it, I believe, of paper that nobody accesses that would be then accessible on a website. So the issue isn't whether or not it's accessible. It's accessible. It's just a different method. I don't understand your question, I guess.
Representative Kalin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Chair Pawlowski, I'll just take one more stab at what I'm after, that although nobody, Ms. LaFleur has testified that nobody has tried to access that report for 20 years in the Legislative Reference Library, and I appreciate the intent of making that the record, what has been the report, we now would call a record under the amendment, available on the website of MMB. Want to make sure that the public can continue to access information, that we're not losing a tool that I doubt that your department, Mr. Yoakum, would abuse, but that others might, to not allow access to information of the status of the state finances.
Either Mr. Yoakum or Representative Pawlowski.
Madam Chair, Representative Kalin, if no one's made the trip up to the reference library, it might be more accessible on someone's computer than it would be walking upstairs and looking at those boxes.
Representative Gottwald.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That actually sort of answered my question. Representative Pawlowski, I appreciate your bringing forward these kinds of things. I think we do need to get more with the electronic age and less paper. But are there any concerns about this not being accessible or as accessible to members of the public who might not have Internet access? I recognize that's increasing, but any concerns along those lines?
Representative Pawlowski.
Madam Chair, Representative Gutwald, I think as Ms. LaFleur testified, no, this has been checked and there's been no complaint at all, other than this is taking up space, a considerable amount of space, inaccessible space the way it appears.
Representative Gutwald.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Pawlowski, how much money is this saving us? Do we have a fiscal note, a negative fiscal note, hopefully, that tells us how much this is saving us towards our budget deficit?
Representative Pawlowski.
Madam Chair, Representative Gutwald, no. I have none from the department and none from the library. I don't know if that one would be creatable at this point.
Are there any other questions? Representative Hilsey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Pawlowski, I think what Representative Kalin was getting at is sort of akin to Representative Diskin's concern about the reference library. And we clarified that by adding the words on its website. I think it seems clear from the testimony that the implication here is that this record would be available on its website, but would that be the intent of the amendment? That what it means is each day the commissioner shall maintain on its website a record of all depositories?
I'm sure, but essentially that would be my intent, but Mr. Yolcom's here and he can explain his.
Mr. Yolcom.
Madam Chair, Representative Hilke, as I said in my testimony, that would be the intent, and it sounds like that's the author's intent also, so I believe we can do that.
The sense of time.
Well, Madam Chairman, since we just did this for the Legislative Reference Library, it seems to me we could just do just the same thing in this case and just add the language on 1.4 after a record on its website. Everyone said they're going to do it, and we did it for the Legislative Reference Library. I'm not sure what the problem is to adding it here.
Madam Chair, Representative, I have no problem with it. I think it's going to happen, but if that's what we need to do.
I would.
All right, so we're going to have Mr. Shepherd review what this amendment looking like now.
Madam Chair and members, as I understand Representative Kahn's suggestion, on line 4 of the amendment, after the word record, insert on the department's website.
That's your amendment, right? Representative Polsky?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, that's fine with me. But I would again hope, though, that this is a written amendment and that we actually act on it rather than referenced as an oral amendment.
We have it in written form. Are there any other questions regarding the Kahn amendment? All right. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed say nay. The amendment passes. All right. We're back to the 801A1 amendment as amended. Are there any other questions? Yes. Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Madam Chair. And this may be a freshman question. Just looking at this amendment, why would the state hold large sums of money in excess of $100,000 in non-interest-bearing accounts?
I'll bring the summary of the state.
Representative Anderson, you're out of my lead now, so we're going to bring the Treasury Department down.
All right. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record.
Madam Chair, members, my name is Jerry Angerbretson from Treasury Division, Department of Minnesota Management and Budget. Representative, the answer to the question is we have state agencies, deputy registrars throughout the state of Minnesota in geographical areas, and the system is set up where all the receipts they take in every day, they're able to put in into state depositories into non-interest-bearing checking accounts, and the money is withdrawn out every day, and that cycle goes on. That's the purpose. We have $100,000 in there. In some cases, it's more. It's not every bank. It's just those banks. What we're talking about here is those banks that have in excess of $100,000 to report it. And we maintain that report every day. We have it, and it's very accessible.
Any other questions? Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Mr. Angerbretson. So they sweep that money out every day, so it's not left sitting there.
And that would say members, yes.
So it's deposited, then it's,
yes.
Thank you. Any other questions? Well, yes, Representative Kahn.
I'm trying to remember, and people with better memories are on, if there's anyone on the legislative audit, wasn't that one of the issues that was raised by the legislative auditor about not transferring, holding money and not transferring it? No one else remembers.
I'm not sure who would be available to answer that question.
Oh, okay. Representative Simon says yes, but different. So
you'll have that conversation. Okay. Representative Polsky, did you have any other comments?
Madam Chair, members may I have no other testifiers that I'm aware of on the bill.
All right. So Representative Polsky moves to recommend for passing this amendment as amended, which is 801A1. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed say nay.
The amendment prevails, and now we're back to the bill as amended. House File 801 as amended. Any other questions regarding the bill? Any other testifiers? All right. Representative Plowski renews his motion to pass House File 801 as amended. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed say nay. The motion prevails.
Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Representative Winkler.
Move approval.
Thank you. Representative Winkler moves approval of the minutes of February 19th. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed say nay. Motion prevails. There will be no meeting tomorrow and Thursday to be announced. So just pay attention to your email regarding that. Any other business to come before the committee? If not, we stand adjourned.